Good morning.
It is good to be with you this morning. If you are visiting with us, we are glad you're here and hope you will come back and be with us again. And hope you'll stick around for a few minutes and let us get to know you a little bit better before you go this morning. We'll be in Acts chapter 3 here in a few minutes. Acts chapter 3. Now the look at us, if you've been looking at the screen behind me and wondering what that's all about, is about the folks in the story, but hopefully it will gradually make its way to us too, and you'll see where that point goes. In Acts 3, we just left off last week with the church kind of getting its start, and all these folks responding to the message that Peter preaches, and all these folks being baptized, and then they are together, and they're studying together and praying together. They're sharing their things, and they are sharing their money, and folks are not going in need, and the church continues to grow and find favor with the people around them as a result of all that. Which brings us to Acts chapter 3. One day, Peter and John were going up to the temple at the time of prayer at 3 in the afternoon. Now, a man who was lame from birth was being carried to the temple gate called Beautiful, where he was put every day to beg from those going into the temple courts. This existence this guy is living is so different than the existence that someone with these issues would live with in our culture nowadays, that it almost is difficult for us to fully wrap our heads around it. I always think of different times where I've encountered folks who are dealing with handicaps and the way the world interacts with that. When I was in college, I've mentioned to you before, I had a friend, Tim, who was in a wheelchair. And I met Tim because we were in the same club together. And the way the clubs would work there at Harding when we went to college is every other Monday night we would get together and have a meeting. Because anything you're in, you got to have meetings. That's the way it works. And so we'd have these meetings every other Monday night. And the club officers would go to the administration of the school and they would sign up for a meeting room that we could use. And when they signed up that semester for the meeting room, it was before Tim had gotten into the club. And their meeting room was in the Gaines building, which was psychology and history. And so the first time I went to a meeting that time, once Tim got into the club, I found Tim at the base of the stairs of the Gaines building, because the Gaines building was about 75 years old and had no elevator. And so here we were, this club with a guy in a wheelchair needing to get to the second floor for a meeting. And so every other Monday night, if you were early for the meeting, you would come in and you would find Tim sitting there at the base of the chair, base of the stairs, waiting. And Tim was waiting for the first three guys who looked somewhat strong to show up. And two of those guys would interlock their arms, and Tim would sit on them, and he would go up the stairs on their arms, and the third guy would grab his chair and pull it up behind them. This was a regular, every other Monday night occurrence for Tim. And I thought, you know, if everybody just came in one week and walked by, and I want to say there was a week where everybody did that as a joke just to see what Tim would do, he's just stuck there. And this guy's existence is he has to wait on folks to carry him here so he can beg. It's different in the sense that very quickly after that, when we would go into reserved meeting rooms, they would be very understanding of the fact that we needed a first floor or we needed a building with an elevator. And if they started to hesitate, we would introduce them to Tim and they would say, oh, never mind. Gradually, as the campus began to move forward in time, because folks were showing up that needed these things, Tim was a graphic design major in the art building. A lot of the graphic design classes were upstairs, and it was another building that was about 50 years old with no elevator, and as Tim would need to take a class, they would move that class downstairs for Tim. Eventually, after Tim graduated, because it took time to raise the money and do all these things, they built an elevator in the art building. And when Tim came back to visit the first time for homecoming, he rolled into the elevator, and all the art professors were there because they were excited about seeing Tim roll into the elevator, because when he turned around to hit the button for floor two, there he saw a brass plaque on the side of the elevator that said, "The Tim Cox Elevator." And he had his picture taken with it, and he was excited and just thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And Tim went up to the second floor and saw it for the first time through new eyes. Nowadays, we have laws, we have things that make sure that someone like Tim, or someone worse off than Tim — Tim is actually the most active guy I know probably and taught me how to play racquetball and beat me most of the time. But we have laws and things in place in our culture to make sure that folks are taken care of, to make sure that folks have access to things. It's the reason you find ramps. It's the reason you find those parking spots with the blue squares in them and the guy in the wheelchair on there. It's the reason you find all those things around us in culture. In this day and time, they didn't have that. And for this guy, this was out of his control, which I think leads us to the question, are there things in our lives that are out of our control? Because you may look at the lame man there begging, and you can't completely associate with that, because that's not you. You have a job, you have retirement, you have a car, you have a house. You are not dependent on someone to take you and drop you off somewhere to beg. Now, at the same time, for a lot of you, you may feel a little closer to this guy than you want to. And you may think, well, I do struggle, and if it were not for the help of others, I probably would not be able to make it through. But I think for a lot of us, we can understand the idea of going through life with some things that just feel a little bit out of our control. And when he saw Peter and John about to enter, he asked them for money. Which brings us to question number two, which is, what do you think it's going to take to fix it? You have this thing in life that is out of your control, and you probably have somewhere along the way, daydreaming, just thinking out loud, whatever it may be, thought of, if it were only this, if I only had this, if this person would only do this thing, if I only had access to these resources, then everything in life would be better, would be different. And usually when we think of what those things are not the answer most of the time. How many times have we thought of, if I only had a little more money? And then for a lot of us, we get to whatever that amount is, and we realize, if I only had a little more money, if I only had a little more time, and then we find our calendar emptying before us, and there is time, and instead we sit down in front of college football all day yesterday. Instead, we do other things that are not really making great use of time. If I only had this thing that was off my plate and someone else would take it, and then someone takes that thing off your plate and you're still right where you were. My wife and I, we always have this ongoing joke because she is a workaholic and I am laid back, which makes for an interesting mix sometimes. And we're very excited going into the semester because it is the least class load she has had in the time she has been teaching at NCU. And I have found that in the last 3 weeks, she has been busier than any time I can think of. Because whatever the load is, we have a way of adjusting to that load. This guy feels like, if money will come my way today, it will be the answer. But money is not the thing that he really needs. Because again, think of the life which he is living. It's a difficult place to live the life that he's living, and he's lived that life for a very, very long time, dependent on others. So Peter looked straight at him, as did John, and then Peter said, "Look at us." Which, if I'm the man, I'm thinking, I already am. That's why I asked you for money. But Peter says, "Look at us." So the man gave them his attention, expecting to get something from them. Look. And I think a lot of times that's what we need to hear is just look, because he's looking at them, but what he's looking for is not what he really needs. What he's looking for is something different than what they have in mind. And what he's looking for, honestly, is just to continue this same pattern of life that he's been going through for years and years and years. And so many times we get into that rut and we just keep going through that same pattern of life that we've been going through for years and years and years. And so Peter says, "Silver and gold I do not have, but what I do have I give you." Now we have here at our church frequently folks that either call or come in or come by and they want help with something. And sometimes we're able to help out and other times we're not. Recently, we have realized that the money that has been budgeted for things like that has been spent for the most part, and now it becomes are we even capable of doing what we want to do to help out at the next point? And if you say to folks that come in, "Silver and gold I do not have, but here's what I can give you," I think a lot of folks' ears close at that point. Because we are so focused in on the thing that we think we must have that we don't want to hear anything else. And it's so easy for us to do, isn't it? Because when we have a need, when we have something that we know is the thing that will fix things, when we have something that is missing, it is so easy for us to focus in on that thing that we miss everything else. And we do that with God sometimes, I think. We get so focused in on the bills that are here this month. We get so focused in on the deadlines. We get so focused in on the medical issues, whatever it may be, that we struggle in seeing what God is doing. So Peter says, we don't have this, but here's what we do have. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, walk. Now, I'm going to guess on the list of things that this guy might ask for sitting at the temple gate today, there's nowhere on the list that this is there. It's money, it's sustenance, it's the basic needs of life that he thinks he needs. And this thing is probably something that's way off out in the way far corners of his imagination. And he never once thinks this is what is possible today. And it's the reason Peter says, look, it's the reason Peter changes his attention, because he realizes, I can give you money and that's going to help temporarily, but this is something so much greater than that that I can give, and there's purpose behind it on top of that. And so he says, walk. And taking him by the right hand, he helped him up, and instantly the man's feet and ankles became strong. I love this image, because if you've known anyone who has not been able to walk for an extended period of time, their feet and ankles do not look like the feet and ankles of athletes. Their feet and ankles look like feet and ankles that have not been used for a very long time. And they begin to wither a little bit, and they maybe be shapen and face the wrong direction a little bit. And instantly, this guy's feet are good. And for years and years and years, they have not been. And now they are. The man's feet and ankles became strong. He jumped to his feet and he began to walk. When is the last time you jumped? Now, for a lot of you, you're going way, way back in your mind. And if I were to throw a jump rope out in front of you this morning, you would tie something up with it. I don't know. You wouldn't think of jumping. We had basketball nights from time to time in the gym, and I remember the first night in there and the first time I went to jump to make a shot, and my legs thought, we haven't done that in a while, and we're not quite sure what to do with this whole idea. We don't jump. And I think the jump, beyond just the physical nature of it, something we need to recognize is the jump is excitement. If Peter and John had dropped a coin in the metal cup, which is how we would all imagine it. I know it's probably not what happened, but we all imagine the beggar being that way. If Peter and John had seen the guy by the side of the road with the sign and put a dollar bill out the window, the reaction is rarely to jump. The reaction to the coin might be, I'd rather hear paper hitting the bottom of that. The reaction to the dollar coming out the window might be a nod and a smile, or it might be nothing at all. But for this guy, what he's getting is not just enough to get through the next day. It's not just enough to pacify the situation for a moment longer. What he's getting is life-changing, which is the thing that brings us all here this morning. What we have received from God is life-changing. It is not the one bill that you'd like to be paid off being paid off. It is not the one medical thing going the right way. It is not the one family relationship getting slightly better. What you have been given, and we talked about in Bible class this morning, and Mike talked about a few minutes ago, is the life of his son for you. And it brings us all here together today. And that should be enough to make us jump. And I flirted with the idea this morning, have everybody stand up and jump, but I won't make you do it. But it should give us that level of excitement. And this guy, his life is changed forever. And not only does he stand up and begin to walk, but he jumps because he can. And because he hasn't. He jumps. Then, it doesn't stop here, and this is not where the story ends. He went with them into the temple courts, walking and jumping still, and praising God. So he walked, he jumped, and then he went, which to us, I think, is a reminder that we need to go. There is something that we need to do, a place that we need to go. Now, for him, where he went is very significant, because the added element of this that we've not talked about yet is, yes, he is a man who is handicapped, he is lame, he is there, unable to function in society the way that others did because of the way their culture worked. But beyond that, the reason he is sitting at the gate of the temple is not just because this is where people pass by and those people are on their way to church and it's a great way to guilt people into giving you something. He's sitting there at the gate of the temple because he is not welcome inside. Because the way their system was set up, if you are lame and crippled and here by the temple gate, you are also ceremonially unclean and you are not welcome inside there. And so you have, for your entire life, sat at the gate to a place that you knew God was on the other side of, and you could not go. And now a guy you were asking for money 5 minutes ago has made your life so not only can you walk and jump, but you're now welcome inside. And so he gets up and he goes inside to the place that he could not go before, because his life is forever changed. And I don't know what place that you feel like there's been a time where you've been unwelcome and now you're welcome, but it's a cool feeling when you finally get there, when you're able to be at a place where you couldn't go before. And then when that place is the presence of God, it is completely life-changing. So he goes. And then all the people saw him walking and then praising God. And they recognized him as the same man who used to sit begging at the temple gate called Beautiful, and they were filled with wonder and amazement at what had happened to him. Our lives bear witness to what God does. When God works in your life, you can either just sit back and enjoy that, or you can live life out in such a way that people take notice. And this guy, there would be a piece of me if I were this guy and I had sat here all this time and I had watched people going by trying not to make eye contact. I had watched people going by throwing a coin in maybe from time to time. I had watched people ignore. I'd watched people go by and having conversations about me. Can you believe that guy? And he's sitting here every week and poor guy, just everything he's dealing with. You'd gone through this for life. The fact that people would recognize who you are might be a little surprising to you. The fact that they recognize you when you're sitting there is one thing, but when you're walking around and inside the temple gates, that's not where you're supposed to be. You're not in the right spot. But they recognized who he was and were shocked by where he was and the fact that he was walking. People are noticing your life today. As insignificant as you may feel, and as unimportant as you may feel, there is somebody taking note of your life today and the way you were living it. And that witness can show one thing or another to them. And too often, I think we lose sight of this piece of who we are. Our lives bear witness to who God is. And while the man held on to Peter and John, all the people were astonished and came running to them in the place called Solomon's Colonnade. Our lives open the door for the story to be told. There is a story of God that is out there that is waiting to connect with people, and it is us that have the opportunity, it is we that have the opportunity to let that story be told. I mentioned Wednesday night to our Bible study, I've been reading a book called Growing Your Church from the Outside In. It's written by George Barna. He does a lot of church statistical work. And the stat I shared with the group on Wednesday night, and I'll share with you now, is there are 100 million unchurched people in the United States of America. And the way Barna defines unchurched is someone who has not gone to a regular church service in the last 6 months. They may have gone to a wedding or a funeral or something like that, but a regular service, they've not been in the last 6 months. Of those 100 million people, 50 million of them used to go to church. So half of them. Half of them are somewhat familiar with the story. The other half have either just written it off or they don't care about it. You've got these 100 million people out there, and he asked this group of people, statistically, he's a statistician, he knows what he's doing, I don't understand how all that stuff works, stats in college has been a long time. He asked a statistically significant group of those people, what is the reason you don't go to church? And the number one reason among them was, the life that we see people at churches living doesn't look different enough from the life everybody else is living to make a difference. Or the way we might put it sometimes is we're hypocritical. And sometimes that's unfair, sometimes it's pretty accurate. It kind of depends on who we're talking about and what point in life we're at. They looked at people and decided the way those people are living is not important enough a change for me, and so I don't need to be a part of church. Our lives open the door to the story. Now, it's not in a you were lame yesterday and you're walking and jumping today, but how do you interact with life? How do you react when difficulties come your way? How do you react to being here? Are you a part of what the church does regularly? Do you help people? Do you give, as Mike talked about a few minutes ago? Is your life different in some way to the rest of the world around you? Because if it is, it begins to open up the door to the story. And then the beauty of what we see, Peter saw this, and he said to them, fellow Israelites, why does this surprise you? Why do you stare at us as if by our own power or godliness we had made this man walk? The story is not about us. And what Peter and John would say here to the crew is, the story is not about them. Even though they were there and a part of this healing, it's not their power that does this. And for us, when we do things the godly way and people see that and wonder about it, we have a moment where we can say it's not really about us, but let me tell you who it is about. And this is the place where we all begin to freak out a little bit because we don't know this well enough to tell the whole story. We're afraid they're going to ask a question we don't know the answer to. We're afraid they're not going to accept it, whatever it may be. Look at the beauty of what Peter says. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of our fathers, has glorified his servant Jesus. You handed him over to be killed, and you disowned him before Pilate, though he had decided to let him go. You disowned the holy and righteous one and asked that a murderer be released to you. You killed the author of life, but God raised him from the dead. We are witnesses of this. By faith in the name of Jesus, this man whom you see and know was made strong. It is Jesus' name and the faith that comes through him that has completely healed him, as you can all see. The story is all about him. That, by the way, is pretty much the gospel story, and it was done in 4 verses. How much more than 4 verses have you talked about things that don't matter in the last week? How much more than 4 verses do you know about things that are really just not all that important? I know so many things that don't matter. My kids get sigh at about 7 o'clock at night when I grab the TV remote and I turn it to channel 713 on my Comcast cable to watch Jeopardy. And I watch Jeopardy because for at least part of the time I can feel intelligent. And there are dumb, unimportant things that are on Jeopardy that I know. And there are lots of dumb, unimportant things on Jeopardy that I don't know, too, and it's proven a lot. But I will watch these things, and every now and then one of the kids will be like, how do you know that? And I don't know. It's one of those things I've read along the way or learned in school or whatever it may be. I know all these things, and I could share all those facts with you, and none of them matter a hill of beans compared to what Peter has said in these last 4 verses. And so I would say to you this morning, if our lives are opening the door to this story and our lives are bearing witness to him, do we not care enough about what has brought us here this morning to share a little bit of that story with people? Because that was the other interesting thing in this book that I read that was really hard for a preacher to read. Because later on in this book it said, what is it about church that might attract you? And it wasn't preachers, it wasn't how great everything was, it was the people who were there. And who in church could convince you that this might be something that's worthwhile? And they said, the people we know who go there. And that's not me either. And I start to realize very quickly that I can get up here every week and I can do just amazing things, as I often do. And it's not going to matter hill of beans in our community unless you believe that you are a part of this story and that your part of this story is worth telling and connecting with Jesus so that others can come to know him. And if you are not doing that, we're missing out on something. And if you think you're not capable of doing that, then you have kidded yourself to this point because you are capable of doing that. I know you, I know what you can do, and you can tell people about what God has done in your life. Now, the other beautiful thing about that is the people in this book who were surveyed, they didn't take that well from strangers. And so I'm not asking you to do a cold call this morning. I'm not asking you to find a stranger in Valley River Center and tell them about God's doing in your life. Now, if you want to do that, more power to you, and that's fine. But what I am asking you is, do you have coworkers? Do you have neighbors? Do you have family members? Do you have people that you care about, that you have interaction with, that at some point this can begin to open the door to telling them the story of Jesus? And I believe for all of us, the answer to that is, yes, you do. There are people that you can think of right now whose lives would be better if God was a part of it. And that is our mission. That is what we talked about 2 weeks ago at the beginning of Acts, where they were taking this message to Jerusalem and to Judea and Samaria and then to the ends of the earth. That third part is now on us. And we are taking the gospel to the world, starting where we are and working our way out. And if we are not, we have missed it. Now, does that mean you have to know every detail of what goes on in here? Do you think this lame man knows every detail of what went on in here? He's not even allowed past the gate. He hasn't been able to hear all this. And yet his life has changed, and through his example, other lives will be changed too. It's the beauty of the whole story. We are perfectly capable of being a part of it. Now, why do we say, look at us? Because that probably should terrify most of us, because usually some of the things we do, we'd rather people not notice. I always laugh when the difference between a man and a woman that fall down. You ever see someone as they're walking along and they trip over something and fall? I was going to the hardware store of all places one morning, and you shouldn't fall at the hardware store. That seems like it's against the rules. But I was going into the hardware store. I misjudged the curb on the way from my car to the hardware store. This is probably 4 or 5 years ago, so I didn't have old age to blame on it yet. And I went along and I caught the curb and I fell flat on my face in front of the hardware store. And I was like, and I got up and I brushed myself off and made sure everything was in one piece. And then I went on back into the hardware store to get what I needed to get. I saw a woman fall down one time, and she was walking along, and she tripped, and it was every bit as bad as my trip into the hardware store, and she was back up on her feet in one motion and continuing to walk. And I could tell what was going through her mind was, I hope nobody saw that. I think we live too much of life thinking, I hope nobody saw that. We begin to change our lives to be who God designed us to be, and then by design, that life becomes part of our witness to God. And so if you look at your life this morning, you think, I don't want people to look at it, then you can do something about that. It doesn't just have to continue being, I don't want people to see this. And if you look at your life and you think, you know, I'm doing okay some of the time, and I struggle some of the time, that's all of us. Any of you who think you've got it all figured out and you're perfect all the time, we need to do a different sermon next week to talk about that, because that's not how it works. We are going to slip up from time to time, and people can learn from that example too of how do you handle that? How do you get back on your feet? How do you keep going? This morning, your life is part of your testimony to who God is, and that can take this message into our community, even Eugene. Even Springfield, even Thurston, even Junction City, wherever you are at, even your workplace, as worldly or as godly as it may be, even your family, as perfect or as messed up as they may be, this can take that message to them. And then you are capable of opening this book with anybody and just talking about what Jesus did. And when they ask a question you don't know the answer to, you find the answer to that question together or you get help. But none of that happens until you begin the conversation. And this morning, if we all really looked at ourselves, aside from direct family, I would bet we have a whole bunch of stories in this room this morning that are a result of someone else being willing to take us into their story and to connect us with the God that they love. And we need to take that on to someone else. If you were hearing the story for the first time this morning and you thought, well, this is not what I thought it was going to be, it's what it is. Jesus has changed all our lives, and he can change your life too. If you would like to be baptized into him, this would be a great day to do that. This morning, if you know the story and your life is just not looking like it the way you would like it to, you are part of a family of folks that is trying desperately to do the same thing, and we would like to help. Or this morning, if there are just things we can pray about in your life to be your church family and come alongside you, whether it's in good or in struggle, if you have any needs at all this morning, please come while we stand and sing.